Okay, well, I hope everyone enjoyed that. I know it wasn't easy, so kol hakavod to all of you for giving it your all on that first Mishnah. But let's begin. Does anybody want to volunteer to read? I know that's scary. Don't all raise your hand at once, though. Okay, Sophia, thank you very much for we'll get you next, Mindy, okay? Sounds
yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Oh, rats. I want
we'll
to
see how it goes. Not an easy read. Definitely not an easy read. So this is a really hard Mishnah, but I think it's a great like way to, you know, just get into things. It's very ambiguous. Any like thoughts actually before Sophia begins reading? Any thoughts that like just jump out at you after reading this Mishnah? Yes, Orly.
There are many different kinds of people who are supposed to be doing things that they're not.
Yes. Is that that's a general statement about the world and life or like
about No, it's about like different kinds of workers that are like hired and like
Which kinds?
Oh gosh. Okay.
Worry.
there are art skilled workers and then there are like people who like carry things from place to place.
Okay, so that's true. That's 100%. There are different types. So when we mean different types, halachically, you know, it's less significant what they're doing and more significant the nature of the contract, right? So if you'll notice, one thing this Mishnah is it distinguishes between two types of workers. One is what we call a poel or a sechir yom, and that is someone who is hired for a certain amount of time. Right? So I'm a tutor, right? I am going to charge you, I don't know what the rate is these days, let's say $15 an hour. Right? Let's say, I don't know if that's like a little, a lot. Minnie's laughing at me. I don't know. Anyways, so $15 an hour. That's one type of worker. That's what we call a polar scenario. Now, the other type is someone who is hired to do a job. So I hire you to mow my lawn. I hire you to cut my hair, right? All of these types of things. I hire you to, in the Mishnah, transport something from me from point A to point B. I hire you to get my materials. So that's what we call a kablon. Kablon is often translated as a contractor. But it doesn't really mean contractor in the colloquial sense because contractor generally means someone who hires other workers to work for them. It doesn't need to be the case. But what we mean by contractor here is that you are commissioned to perform a task. Now, there's actually a big difference between those two things, as we'll explore. Anyone have any thoughts why they might be different? Like, who cares whether I'm paid based on a rate of, you know, time or based on completion of a task. Why might that make a difference? Think about this case, right? Why would I, let's say I quit halfway. Who is that more what significant for? Think about it. Who's done worse? Who's a worse worker? Yeah, Orly. Go for it.
The person who was hired to do a job.
Good. Why?
Because they haven't done their job and that's what they were hired to do. Whereas somebody who like, you know, is hired just for a certain amount of time, like you're hired to tutor me, like you're not supposed to have completed something specifically by the end of it. Well, you're like, so you can still be paid for just the amount that you've done, for just like the time that you've spent, versus it's harder to kind of judge whether you pay someone for half a job.
Exactly. 100%. In fact, it's hard to, you could even claim, I did it. It's not that you hired me for an hour, because sometimes it's really both, but and that's where it gets complicated. But I agree to you, if I agree to tutor your kid for an hour, right? And let's say I have to leave halfway through. So on the one hand, oh, I didn't do my job. But on the other hand, you could say, well, when you hire me for an hour, what you're really hiring me for is a certain rate. And it's not necessarily that I'm backing out of anything. I did, you know, I performed for a certain amount of time. I should get paid that rate. But so 100%, that's actually reflected in this Mishnah. And yeah, Sophia raised her hand.
Yeah, I guess in light of the time question, what if it's not about like a specific amount of time, but it's like a allocated day or a specific time? Does that make it ruined, I guess? Like,
what would be an example of that? I need it done by a specific time.
Yeah, like this is only supposed to happen on Wednesday.
So so that's what we'll get to. It does make a difference. That's what we'll get to. Yeah. So why don't you look at the Mishnah here.
Did Shula have a question though before? Or?
She did? Okay.
Maybe not.
I guess I was just also thinking like in terms of how replaceable they are. Like if it's someone hired like for a rate versus for a specific task. But I don't know if that's a consideration.
No, that definitely could be. But it depends on the market, right? Meaning like, and even one job could be both. Like I could hire you to teach me a sefer or a book or a language, or I could hire you per hour, right? It could be the same exact person. But I just want to make a very parenthetical note, just in Gemara generally, like notice how it's less important what you're doing and more important the arrangement. Meaning like, you know, it's not as important as are you hired to be, you know, an artist, or are you hired to be a barber, or all these things. That's not really what we're focusing on. We're focusing on the terms of the arrangement, the contract, if you will. Okay, so let's begin the Mishnah. Why don't you go for it? So Sophia volunteered, so.
Okay.
We're ready.
Hasocher et ha'omanin v'hitu zeh zeh, im lahem zeh al zeh, ela tarumot.
Good. So that's the first sentence. What is the upshot of that? What's the bottom line? What's happening? And what is halacha?
Okay. What is happening from the like simple reading without, I guess, the breita is that there's someone hiring like a craftsman to do something. And it seems there was like a mistake on either end.
Okay, good. Good, good. So the mistake point is a good point because it says hitu, right? And ta'a is mistake. The thing is, they're hitu zeh et zeh. Right? So they do something to each other. So the truth is the Gemara actually goes back and forth based on what hitu means. But it seems like what's happening here is that what we're going to go with for today is hitu just means that essentially they back out. That's essentially what happens. In fact, if you got to the bright side, I imagine most of you didn't. The Gemara says it's the same thing as chazru. Chazru nami hitu karulei. You can call it backing out tricking, because how is it tricking? How is backing out of an arrangement tricking someone? Because what happened? I said I'm going to do something for you, and then I say, "Nah, actually, on second thought, never mind." Right? So that's essentially what's happening here. You have an employment employer, and they back out. One of the parties backs out in the middle, and let's say, for instance, for argument's sake, let's say not for like a legitimate, valid reason, which I'll have to also talk about. Not because, you know, something happened, an extenuating circumstance, needed to be somewhere, or they couldn't make it. They just decided they don't want to do it anymore, right? So that's what happens. That's the case. And then it says, "In lahem zeh al zeh el tar omo," right? So what does that mean?
I think we were saying it just means like that there was like there's nothing to do about it. Like we weren't sure how to actually translate tar omo.
Yeah, that's basically what it means. Yeah, Orly, do you want to say?
I'm pretty sure tar omo is just like complaints.
Complaints. It does mean complaints. So all they have is complaints.
So Jewish.
All they do is complain, right? That's what that means. All they can do is complain. Now, how does that sit with you, this notion that all they can do is complain? So what I mean by that is two questions. Number one, should there have been another solution for this quandary? Number two, about complaints. Mindy asked, what was the term for a labor hire by the hour? A sechir yom. It's called a sechir yom, otherwise known as a poel. Pei vav ayin lamed. Right? Well, we'll see. Socher asa umnin usually refers to both. But anyways, so turn to my first question. Let's say you were a judge. How else might you have adjudicated this case? You have two people two parties come to you. There, one party says, I hired so-and-so to do a job for me, and they quit in the middle of the job. What would you, what else could you have set aside from? There's nothing that, like, you know, the judge is going to, you know, and the Mishnah basically says the judge takes the hammer, the gavel, smacks the stand and says, nothing I can do. That's the solution in this case, basically, right? That's, you don't get anything. What else might you have suggested? Shula.
In the first case, though, aren't both parties at fault?
So that's a good point. If they, it does sort of sound like that. Hitu zeh et zeh. But the Gemara sort of understands it to be, not at least not to be limited to that case. We certainly can be talking about this case if one of the parties backs out. And that's what, as you saw, the Mishnah sort of goes on to that, right?
Right. Because it sounds like there's, like, that's not the case if one party backs out versus...
Ah, okay. So Shula's already getting differentiated.
I don't know if I'm...
That's how you're differentiating between the first part of this Mishnah and the second part and the third part. That's really interesting. I never even thought about that one.
Quick question. I don't know if it's
actually a really good way of interpreting it. Maybe they both backed out. That's not the only way to interpret it, but that's fair. But what I guess what I'm suggesting is you could have suggested that you should have to pay. Meaning, if let's say I'm an employer and I hire someone for an hour and then I back out halfway, maybe I should have to pay them for the other half hour.
Isn't that what the Mishnah delineates a little bit later?
Sort of.
But okay.
You're right. You're right. But the question is, then what's this saying?
I assume this case was only if it was mutual, but...
Okay. Okay, you know what? That is a legitimate way to read this case. We'll see the bright that doesn't go with that, but that's legitimate. Anyways, yes, Orly.
It kind of seems like the assumption here is that, like, either not getting the job done because you backed out halfway, or... like not getting paid for the other half of your work because you didn't do the work is like, those are two things are like punishment enough kind of to like be it. Like you don't get what you promised or what you paid for. So that's like, that's it. Like that's the punishment. That's the deal. Like they didn't complete the job. Okay. So you don't have to pay them, or like, you know, you backed out halfway. Okay. So your job is only half done. So that in and of itself is like, you know, they both just negate each other, like each other's promises.
Okay, perfect. So two points to make here. So the first point is that you mentioned the word punishment. What does everyone think about that word punishment? Is punishment the right word here?
To me, it sounded a lot more like a consequence.
Right.
As in just dealing with the natural circumstances of advantage or disadvantage and loss, given like the actions of either party involved.
Right. That was actually, that was very intelligently said. I think what you mean is that there are two ways to look at this. This might not be a punishment so much as this is a natural consequence. It's not like we're imposing a financial penalty on either of them. It could be that, no, you owe them something. And that's going to be part of the big question here, right? That's the big question to ask, is when I say I'm going to work for you, what do I owe you? Do I owe you anything? Wait, what Orly basically just said is that, no, that's what you're basically saying, Orly. I think. What you're saying is, I said I'm going to work for you. That's a promise. But I don't owe anything. I don't owe you anything. If I back out, I don't get paid.
Yeah, this is all an assumption that, like, there's no prepayment on anybody's part.
So prepayment's a good point, but that is actually what Shula mentioned me earlier. That's not the only point. So here's the flip side, right? Usually, so the big elephant in the room here is the notion of kinyan, right? So usually in halacha, there's something called a kinyan. A kinyan means a commitment. A commitment to either do something or to transmit ownership of something. What a kinyan does is binds both parties, right? So if I, like, if you write a contract, let's say that you're going to sell me your house and you hand over that contract to me, if I back out and say, you know what, I don't want to buy it anymore, I can't do that. It's not a question of penalty. It's a question of, no, you own the house, you must pay me. Right? That's usually the, if I'm a salesman and I'm selling a product, you know, I'm selling watches, and you pick up the watch with the intention of acquiring it, I give it to you. You can't say, you know what, I actually don't want it anymore. You could have it back. No, I'm sorry, you bought it, you gotta pay. Right? That's the way this usually works. It's not happening here. That's not happening. I am saying, I'm going to work for you. You say, great, I'll pay you money. One of us backs out. And to Sophia's point where she said, well, you know, how would mutual even work here? Like, doesn't one have to back out first? So I think most of the time that is true. Practically, to Shula's point about being mutual, I think if it's mutual, then I think, yeah, like neither party owes the other either anything because they both decide to stop, right? But I would say that's pretty obvious, right? I would say that, and to another point here, and this is the other point in this line, there's so much to say even just on this one line, which is amazing, is that we have this thing, all they have is complaints, right? So many of you might think that's just nothing. that's just nothing, like complaints, who cares? Like, stop complaining, like, okay, cry to your mommy, but like it doesn't belong in the Mishnah, like whatever. Oh, mommy, like they hired me and they're not paying me. Like, who cares? But it's not, clearly not, right? Like this is a legal, this is like, we're trying to figure out the will of God here, right? What does God determine is the just solution to this quandary? Complaining doesn't sound like a very good solution, but it must be something. And we'll see at some point, the Talmud takes complaining very seriously. It's not in any case where there are complaints, right? That doesn't always happen. Sometimes I have a right to back out of something and there are no complaints. You don't have the right to complain. So ha, no complaining. But complaining is actually significant. The question is what significance it has. And we'll have to deal with that at some future point. But it also means, it sounds like if there's complaining, it means someone did something wrong, right? Which calls into another point here, and then I'll make this one point, I'm going to get to Mindy's point, and then we'll get to the next question. Sorry, just to summarize what we said so far, which is, we have two parties, one of them is backing out. That's what we're going to assume for now. There doesn't seem to be a financial penalty. And that's interesting. The question is why, and when would there be? It seems like you can back out. You have that right. The question is, there's this notion of complaints. What is that? What is the status of complaints? What is the significance of it? It may relate to a moral idea. And this is also something really interesting about this, is that there may be sort of a difference between morally what you are quote-unquote obligated to do and legally what you're entitled to. Meaning we might say you're a bad person. You backed out because you agreed to something and now you're not doing it. And that's important, right? Because Judaism isn't, like, this is halacha. So this is not just about what I can claim from you financially. It's also about, you know, your obligation to be an upstanding citizen. And it might be reflective of that, which is also something to note. Like, you know, what role does morality and ethics play in all of this? But that's all within this first line. That's the first case here. There's no financial penalty. Yes. Mindy, raise your hand, I think. Yeah, go for it.
Could the difference, because I know when you were talking, you mentioned, like, you know, I mowed half a lawn, or you hired right. someone, they mowed half a lawn. Could the difference be between, like, backing out before any work is done versus in the middle or, like, partway through a job?
Boom. Absolutely yes. Absolutely yes. In fact, that is a difference, the way that the Gemara understands it, between case one and case three. So you nail that, Mindy. Absolutely. Now, the question is why? Why does it make a difference? You're right. You're absolutely right. It's what the Gemara, the Brisa says. There's a difference between if I started the job or I didn't start the job. Why does that make a difference? Sorry, one second. knock my saber here. Why is it, who cares whether I started or not? Why should that be significant? Yeah, Mindy, it was your suggestion, so you gotta back it up.
All right. I mean, there's a difference if I've hired someone to do a job, I think it's done, and it gets halfway done, and now it's a totally different process of trying to find someone in to come and finish the job. Rates might be different. But in the case where you hired someone, you know, let's say I hired someone to do a job, it was supposed to be for X amount of dollars, and before they even do it, they pull out. So it's not like I have half a contract and then I have to find a new half contract. It's I think, a different case between that and just I need to find someone new to do this job. You don't have the same necessarily either potential for loss.
Beautiful. Right? 'Cause if I've... Yeah, that's what the RITFA says, essentially. Basically, you know, think of it the barber example, right? So you hire someone to cut your hair, right? Or, you know, do your hair. I don't know. Imagine you're doing it in like some sort of like bun or like fancy style or something like that. So if they don't do it at all, so that's annoying. And it might even be more than just annoying, right? Like maybe you had a wedding the next day and you hired a hairdresser to dress you for the wedding and now you don't. And now like your hair is going to look like a wreck and it's too late. Which might be different than a case where it's just like, okay, I can get a haircut tomorrow too and it'll be the same thing. But both of those cases are different than when they do half of your hair and they just leave the other half, right? Like, that's really bad. Like, you know? So, now, then again, maybe you get someone else to do the other half, which really might affect things. But what you're essentially saying is it's almost like better that you did nothing. It's like a sort of, it's a very precarious situation. So that's 100% true. Another thing to think about is, you know, what constitutes a kinyan? What constitutes a binding commitment, right? So, and I'll put it this way. This is something to really think about. And maybe, obviously not going to get to all these questions right away. I mean, we'll just get to the mishnah today, which is great. But another thing to think about is this concept of kinyan. And so the first line of this mishnah essentially tells us, you know, a verbal contract is worth the paper that it's written on. That's sort of like a sentence that's out there, meaning it's pretty worthless. Meaning like, okay, you say you're going to do it, but like, it's not binding. You might be a bad person. We might have, you know, a whole halachic system for dealing with someone who backs out on their word, but you don't have to pay for it. Okay, fine. So that might be, but what is a kinyan? So usually, if I'm giving you a house or I'm selling you a product, so that makes a lot of sense, right? Because the kinyan, the commitment is on this specific item. So I'm giving that, I'm committing to give this to you. Now you own it and you reciprocate by having to pay me. What would be the kinyan here? What do you acquire? Even if I pay you, what am I buying? Am I buying a service? A service is sort of an amorphous, abstract notion. There's no, you know, there's nothing there really. What would I be buying? Am I buying the worker? That would be quite interesting, wouldn't it? So that's, you know, so that's also something to think about. And maybe what Mindy's saying is no, but the kinyan is when you start working. That's how an employment contract works. Once you start working, there's nothing to buy. But once you start working, that seals the deal. At that point, you've committed to doing the job, and I've committed to paying you. Anyways, that's all really significant. Okay, so that's our first case. Let me get to a second case. Anybody want to volunteer the second case? So case one, no financial commitments, no penalties, nothing. Orly, you want to take it? Sahar?
I'll try my best.
That's all we can do in this world, right?
No, that's true.
I don't have you too much, don't worry.
Sahar tachamar veta keder, lavi praiparin v'chalilin lekala olameit, upolim la'alot pashtan min hamasra.
Good. So what are the, yeah, so I mean, we have two scenarios of hired workers here. So what are they?
So there's like the people that you hire to like kind of bring your like poles, beams, whatever.
Bringing stuff to the places. It actually is significant though.
Yeah.
So the chamar, it means like a donkey driver. You know, they didn't really have limos or Ubers back then. So donkey was the way to go. And kadar, it's actually interesting. It might be whether it's karar or kadar. If you look at the second Tosa with a resh or a dalid, is it someone who has a wagon or someone who is a potter and sells pots or whatever? But the point is that you're hiring a transportation agency, essentially. And why? You're bringing frifrin. Frifrin are flutes, if you look at Rashi. Lakala, right? That one we get, right? For a bride, meaning for a wedding. You're hiring musicians or somebody to transport the music. Olamis, or for the opposite, Rahman al-Islan, or for a funeral. Now, why is it significant that it's for a funeral or for a wedding? What do you think? Yeah, Shula.
Time sensitive?
Yeah, because if I can't get it today, that's it. It's just not going to happen. So that's case one, right? Case two is lahalos pishtanu min amisra. So what you're doing here, if you look at, you have some sort of flax that's soaking. Apparently that's something that you do with flax to treat it. Ask your local, you know, I guess, clothes maker, whatever. And someone who works in the garment industry. And you have to get the flax out, because if you leave it too much where it's soaking, it's going to get ruined. Right? And you hire workers to do that, and they say, nah, sorry, not going to do it. Again, why is that important? That this is their job. Because they don't do it now, what might happen? Yeah, Mindy.
The flax will get ruined? Or
it actually get ruined, right? That's really time sensitive. Now, would you say that case A and case B, like, is the wedding case the same as the flax case? Or if I ask you, which is more, I'm going to ask a tricky question, actually. I'm curious to see what people will respond. Which is more consequential? Which instance of quitting on the job is more consequential? Like, the case with the wedding or the case of the flax? Let's do a poll. Who says that the flax case is more consequential? Okay, Sophia, Shula, and Mindy. Good. And who says the wedding case is more consequential? Okay, Tehila didn't raise your hand. Orly, Hadassah, and some people are unsure. Okay, so why do you think the flax case is, Sophia, you think a flax is more important than a wedding? What kind of insensitive ingrate are you?
No, this is really off-brand for me. But I think that the emotional duress and loss is like really sad for those, but there's a financial loss that comes with the flax. Like, you're actually making the person who is hiring you losing money.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So this is how we think when we learn Gemara. Okay, you know? I'm sorry that you lost you don't have any music at your wedding, but where's the money? That's what's important. Ultimately, like, what do you lose? You could have had someone play an instrument, and you don't.
I'm just not really sure how we can evaluate this objectively.
Evaluate what? Either because,
for some people, they really, really can't afford that difference in money, and it's going to, like, have a massive, you know, consequence. And for some people, that like, the stress of not having music is, like, way stronger than, like, a few bucks on the next labor.
So what you're saying is I didn't ask the question appropriately, and that's a fair point. But In terms of what Beistin can do, that's what I mean. It's hard to evaluate the emotional loss of a not being able to have, maybe nowadays you would be able to, maybe you could sue them.
I don't want to keep
a hard thing. As opposed to the loss of pishton, you know, materials we can evaluate very easily. Yeah, Orly, what do you think?
I mean, if you're hiring someone to like play at your wedding and they don't show up, then there are like a lot of different people who've like expected you to like do this thing that you're not doing. So even though like financially it might be like, it's still a business deal that's gone wrong for like multiple different people.
Yes. And you know what? On that note, let's on the one hand, these are the same. And what I mean by that is, and I'll get to your point next in a second. Then it says, V'chol davar she'aved. What do you think that, what do you guys think that means? Chol davar she'aved. You know what the word davar aved means? The term, you've heard of it before? It's actually an important term in halacha for a few areas, like chol amoed. We talk about this concept, davar ha'aved. Anybody know what that means? Yes, Tehillah.
Financial loss.
Correct. So any form of loss, okay? So they're both considered a loss here. They're different types of losses, but they're both a loss. One is a loss of an opportunity, not a financial opportunity, an opportunity to do something. The other one is a loss of money.
Wait, so can I just say something?
Yes, you can.
I think thinking back to the last question that you asked, it goes back to the question of like punishment versus consequence.
Ah, very good.
Because if someone's missing money, the natural consequence is replacing money. How do you like replace emotional duress? Like I'm thinking like, you know, in, you know, chaval, like if you damage somebody, you're kind of like paying punishment, you know, for the distress that they went through. Like, I don't know how you can really have a natural consequence around that.
100% true. But look at the recourse that you do have. It says, V'chol davar she'chazru bahen, and they back out, the workers back out. Makom she'ein sham adam, if it's a place where there are no people. Now, what does that actually mean, right? Like, we don't mean that you live in the middle of South Dakota, necessarily. What does it mean? It means you can't get anybody to do the job in their stead. You're stuck. Now, ain't no one, or at least for that same amount of money. So it says, Makom she'ein adam socher alehen, oh, mata'an. So I don't know if you saw Rashi or whatever other forms of translating Aramaic you had at your as your recourse here. But what that means is you can hire on their account or trick them. So that means you can hire other workers and they have to pay for it. We'll get into some of the specifics later. What are there any limits to that? But they, which, let's say for argument's sake, you know, let's say you hired them for, you know, $1,000 to play at your wedding. You can, let's say you can now pay, if you pay another person $2,000, they have to pay $1,000 of it. Let's say. Right? Because now it's last minute. Now you need to find someone last minute to play at the wedding. The rights are going to be much higher. They're liable up to their salary. That's what Sochar Alehen means. You can hire someone else at a higher rate, and they're responsible. Now that there are limitations to that, and we'll have to get to the specifics of that later on, but that's one recourse. The other thing is matan. As we'll see in the braisa, that means you can lie to them. You can trick them. You could say, oh, I see that you don't want to play for my wedding anymore. Well, what if I double the price, triple the price? And then they come and then you're like, sorry, I'm only paying you what you agreed to me, you nasty backstabber. I was not going to be missing my wedding. Like, what's wrong with you? Anyway, you can do that. You're allowed to lie. Don't call them a nasty backstabber. You're not allowed to call them names. I'm just joking about it. But you can trick them. That's what you can do. Why? What is this category? This category is davar ha'aved. So we have category one, which is not davar ha'aved, right? Category one, where ain't no financial penalty, is just complaints. That's where I hire you. I could find someone else to do the same job for the same rate, or I can wait. Okay, I don't get my lawn mowed today. I'll get it mowed tomorrow. That's case one. Case two is no, it's not so simple. If I don't get it lot mode today, I'm going to get fined, or, you know, you did half the job, or, well, I'll actually get a heap out of it, or I need the music today, or I need this done today, and it's going to cost me, or if you don't get it done today, I'm actually going to lose money. The pishton is going to get ruined. My flax is going to get ruined. So that's the story. So this, I'll get Sophie's point and Sheila's point over in that after calls, but to Tahila's point before, this is a sort of a recourse, right? Because it's not about the emotional distress, because we're finding a way to enable you to get it done. Now, that being said, it sounds sort of like a punishment, right? It's hard to imagine that you're just allowed to trick the person and that's a natural consequence of when someone backs out. But it's interesting. Yes, we had Sophia and I think Shula, and then we're going to have to call it. Yeah, Sophia.
In light of Tehillah's point, if the clarification of Chazru Bahen Makom She'in Sham Adam, if for some reason there was someone accessible at the same rate, like quickly, and you decide to not to look them over and charge for hire, like I this wasn't a question. My point was, in light of emotional duress, like it's emotionally stressful to have to like quickly scramble and find like new people to like play at your wedding. But if we're saying that there's a chance that like if you looked at like who was available and someone for the same price was there or someone higher, you wouldn't be able to choose the person who was higher. Like if there was technically like makom sheyesh amadam, then this wouldn't be the same answer.
Correct.
So that stresses that it's really not about emotional stress, because that's still a stressful process. But well, we're not,
well,
we're not,
yeah, yeah. It, this has its limits, right? Meaning the main emotional duress is, it's not about the duress, it's about you need it done then, and you're not getting it done. This is an opportunity,
even causing,
and the opportunity is leaving. It's not really about the duress. So the halacha awards you different ways of ensuring that it gets done. Now, you can't gratuitously pay someone lots of money when you could have paid someone the same price that these workers would have made.
Right. So
workers, right?
So halacha. So it's about making sure halacha wants to make sure it gets done, or halacha wants to make sure that like the people say about mesameach hatam bakala, it's about like not stressing out like the kala's family, whatever. Like, I know that like I'm being a little facetious.
No, no, I have no problem with it. I'd say generally, like this is where like, you know, generally I think we care about both. But in terms of what we're willing to enforce, what we enforce is that you agreed to do a job for me. I have ways of ensuring that it gets done. These are my two avenues right now: lying or hiring someone else for more money, and it's on your bill. Okay. And then, okay, I just want to say that it's 9:45. So if anybody wants to, if everyone's like just for time, I don't want to pressure anyone, but Tila had a question, I think, or was it Mindy? I
forget. Shula.
Shula. Sorry. Shula. Yes.
To, I guess, Tahila's point a bit, and also to the first part about Tarumot, if your complaints or your emotional duress could potentially result in loss of business because of like reputation, is that considered, does that translate into Davar Havid? Like if you don't have someone at your wedding and you're a really prominent person and now no one's going to do business with you, is that, it's like a hit to your reputation that could lead to a financial loss? Is that considered?
Well, for sure. I think what we're saying is that that even if there is no financial loss, it's not financial, right?
Right.
That's what we're saying. Like, it's a loss of an opportunity. I needed you today. It was time sensitive, because tomorrow I won't have that opportunity. Right, that unlocks these two recourses. Now, I think your point is a really good one for the following reason, right? Which is, outside employment contracts, what would the rule be, right? So let's say there was no agreement, but you caused a loss to my reputation or something like that. Let's say you go to my wedding and you make a complete fool of yourself, or I don't know, and then everybody's laughing at me afterward. So is that financially enforceable? I'm not sure that it is. So that's something else to think about here. Are we coming at this from a damages perspective? The pishton, on the other hand, the case of the flax, you can argue is literally damages, although it's not so clear. We'll see. It's a bit indirect. You put the stuff in the hole to soak. You hired me to get it. I relied on you to get it, and now I'm not getting it, and now the pishton gets lost. It's not like I took a blowtorch and ruined your stuff. right? So it's not direct, and that's important in halacha. But like, are we looking at this from a contract law perspective or from a damages perspective, which are two different ways of looking at it? That's your point, Shula, because you're saying, well, maybe there is some sort of tangible damage here that you
even the first patient, like where they haven't started working. Could you make that like, could you make that argument, let's say, for the first case where people haven't necessarily started working, so they're technically have no financial liability, but...
Well, no, well, that gets to the teeth of a commitment.
Right.
Again, like, you hired a band. They said they would come. They tell you day of, sorry, I'm actually, I have tremendous stage fright, and I'm really nervous. I can't come. Oh, yeah, I shouldn't have gone into music, should have you? Anyway, no band for the wedding. Now, they didn't do anything yet, but because of them, I'm not going to have a band in my wedding unless I play top dollar. So it's not all about starting the work. That's just a significant factor.
Right. No, I was thinking more of like the very beginning of the Mishnah, where like...
Yeah, 100%. And what I'd say is that this is a case where it seems like, although this is the Rishonim say, it's not necessarily the case, but some more Rishonim say, that this second case is basically case A, where it's just a verbal commitment. I haven't started working yet. It's still just a verbal commitment. No action has been performed. But the reneging of that verbal commitment has more severe consequences than simply, oh man, I got to hire someone else. Right? I have to pay more money to hire somewhere else. If I don't get it done right now, I'm never going to get the opportunity. My flax is going to get ruined, right? So it's like essentially like case A with an extenuating circumstance.
So that's just the story. Bigger consequences.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right? And then I'll just spoil it for you because we're running out of time. The next case where all of a sudden we say, again, which was the same case as the first one, but all of a sudden it's different for some reason. It's not hitu, it's chazubahen, yadamal tatona. That is going to be a case where you started working. And if you look at Rashi, it's also going to be a case of a kablan, right? If you saw that Rashi, asocher esa umnin laso melacha bekablanut, right? Because if I hired you to do a job and you started, like think of the barber who's cutting, who's dressing your hair and they do half the job, that's different than I hired a tutor and they back out. Like, okay, but like it's just time. But if it's a job and they start, it's not just a verbal commitment. So then, you know, the rules change. Okay, I think hopefully we've had some, material to think about until we move next time. So if you have time over the next week, you could, you know, finish what we discussed, which is this Mishnah, the Rashi, and then this Bright on the Gemara and I above him a bet. If you, for some reason, have like, you know, hours and hours on end, then you could even do the Ritvas that I emailed you in that email. They're really great. Ritzah Hashem, we'll pick up next time. We'll learn the Brisa, learn more about the differences of these cases, and hopefully eventually, I think the very next big topic I want to tackle is what is the nature of this verbal commitment? What are the stages of commitment and deployment contract? Which means, what happens if it's just words? What happens if we start, you know, the employees start working or they travel to the job? And this is, by the way, from both the perspective of the employer and the employee. I just want to mention, if it's the employer, then that backs out, then they also bear the consequences of that. And then finally, a case that isn't talked about here in the Gemara explicitly, and the question is if it makes a difference, and it's a big discussion, is what if I do a formal acquisition? So say I write a contract. Right. Say instead of just saying, hey, want to come work for me? You say yes. And then I actually write out a full contract and you agree. Does that do anything? That's also like a big discussion. That's what we'll see going forward. I want to wish everyone a great night. Shabbat shalom. And again, I'll stay on for a few minutes if anybody has any questions. I'm going to stop the recording now.